Support for this show comes from Saks. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe, like making vacation your whole personality with a camp shirt from Casablanca that screams Italian holiday. You can shop Saks.com for everything on your agenda, whether it's suede Prada loafers for a dinner party or a bright theory blazer for the office. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Welcome back to another edition of NFL University. I am Steven Serta of Arrowhead. Pride NFL University is brought to you by DraftKings. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code SBNNFL for a special offer when you sign up. That's code SBNNFL only at the DraftKings Sportsbook. We've got plenty to discuss after week one of the NFL preseason across the NFL. Plenty of overreaction to dive into and embrace or backtrack, if you will. But first, I need to welcome in Justice Mosqueda of Acme Packing Co., as well as Kyle Posey of Niners Nation. And where we begin today's show is with Chargers safety Derwin James, who inks a new massive four-year, $76.4 million extension. Averages over $19 million a year and totally resets the safety market. He will also receive $29 million in year one, which is a record for the safety position. The Chargers now have four of the NFL's highest paid defenders, I think doing exactly what you should do when your superstar quarterback is still on a rookie deal. And you can, even when you likely extend Justin Herbert next offseason, you can still backload some of that money, so you still got a few cheap years of quarterback play the way the Chiefs kind of did with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I mean, he deserves this money. There's no doubt about it. And I remember us talking about the safety list from ESPN, and wasn't he like number six on the list? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yep, he's the highest paid safety in the NFL for a reason. We don't have to listen to the executives spew nonsense now. And I think it's cool to see. I don't know if you guys saw the interaction with his agent. His agent tweeted out just like him being super happy, super grateful. That's always cool. And we should probably do a better job of, you know, highlighting that side of the business. But good for Derwin. Stay healthy so we can all enjoy you, man.
I mean, these guys are football players. It's what they want to do, right? It's what they've devoted their life to. Like, being in a holdout type of situation or hold in now is not what these guys want to go through at this point of the season. They just want to play ball, and it's nice to see him react that way, because I really want Derwin James to play a full season of football too. Like, I've really missed him on the field just because of like the injuries and stuff like that. He obviously is one of the more talented safeties in the league. He kind of like, he does like all the Jamal Adams stuff, but better, right? Is kind of like the way to kind of explain it. Just really happy. I mean, the roster construction on the defense for Los Angeles is going to be interesting, because it really does feel kind of like stars and scrubs, right? We talk about, you know, they have some of the most highest paid players on the defensive side. They have a defensive head coach who's supposed to be innovative in Brandon Staley. But then you look at the commentary after last year and it's like, well, yeah, Staley needs, you know, another year, a little bit more roster churn and stuff like that to be able to get this defense to where it wants to go, just because some of those guys on the front line who are not making as much as Derwin James or Joey Bosa aren't really up to snuff. Like, if they could just get baseline average around those stars, I think this defense just takes off, right? And that's when, I know the AFC West is really competitive, but that's when like the Chargers become like an actual, you know, threat to go to the Super Bowl.
How do you guys feel about the Chargers head coach Brandon Staley and his coach speak? And by that, I mean, essentially anything he says, and it could be the most like benign, vanilla thing ever, and the internet will take it and run with it and prop him up as if he's this god. How do you guys feel about his words?
I kind of have been guilty of just eating it all up and being like, yeah, Brandon Staley rocks. Like he's a really interesting head coach. But then it's like, we were talking before the show about Eric Bieniemy, where I think Eric Bieniemy is kind of like that, the Chiefs offensive coordinator, where he's a fun press conference to listen to, but it's because he's good at speaking to the media and cracking jokes and like making friends with people, but he never says anything. Like, he's just good at kind of spewing the coach speak and making it a little bit more interesting than some other coaches do. So he's a super likable guy, but he never actually says anything like with any real substance behind it. And I think with Brandon Staley, too, especially in this like analytical generation of, you know, football analysis where he's breaking a lot of that stuff down, then the Twitter football nerds are like, yes. Like one of us, he's finally, we found a head coach who embraces everything that we've been doing all these years.
Well, he came into that role kind of primed, right? We as like the media were primed for Brandon Staley. What did they say? He's innovative, right? And he's smart. Those are the two things. And he goes up there and he talks about cover seven and stuff like that, right? All the man match quarter stuff. And like, if you watch college football, you see that a lot. So it's not like he made it up specifically, but he does come from that Fangio tree that did kind of bring that to the NFL. Those kind of like, it's almost like blitz coverages without a blitz. With that being said, when he says things like, what was it, the bye week last year, where he's like, yeah, we're trying to track like EPA per like personnel packages and stuff like I don't actually believe that. Like, I know people who work in analytics departments and stuff around the league, and like, that is very, man, that's like very caveman, like just looking at like personnel packages and EPA from like that perspective. With that being said, the Chargers are like a super small organization. I don't think people realize how small the Chargers organization is relative to kind of what the rest of the league has. So it's one reason why, and they have a good front office, but it's one reason why their front office has so much power is just like there's fewer people in the room. So I wouldn't be surprised if like they didn't have a robust analytics staff. So like, maybe Staley is having to like fumble and thumb through a lot of these like analytics packages or something that like people are sending him. So I don't know. It's kind of a mixed bag for me, but I'm more just looking forward for Staley. Like, this is the year that defense has to take a step up. He gets a mulligan for last year. Everyone understands the situation and circumstances. I want to look at what it looks like moving forward.
The reason I bring that up is because, like, Daniel Popper, from The Athletic, he's a beat writer for the Chargers. He wrote about Staley the other day, and part of his article, some of the Staley quotes. There has to be fearlessness to play in this game, and that's what I wanted to establish here. The history of this team when I got here, it was like someone's going to get hurt. They're going to blow a lead, and he talked about the whole chargering thing, and then he talked about how it's going to change, what he's going to do, and it was just. It seemed like there were so many cliches lost in there that at one point it's just like, what are we doing here, man? Like it almost seemed like for him, like if I'm him, I understand it. Like I would keep feeding these guys all the, you know, all the lines, the one-liners that people are going to take and run with on the internet anyway. But I know there's a group of people who are, and this goes with Herbert too. They feel like the Chargers are being crowned far too quickly, whether it's Staley, whether it's Herbert. And they're not treated as everyone else. You guys think that's fair?
Probably. I mean, I know a lot of I just know from like the defensive side of football, like a lot of people who are in like the college football apparatus, right, are kind of rolled their eyes at a lot of the Staley, just like blowing smoke up his butt type of thing. Cause like they run stubby, like they run like a couple college coverages, but like you could turn on any game in the SEC and you could see these coverages being played. So it's not like he innovated these things, but he did get the most out of that Rams defense, right? And hopefully we're going to see a little bit more from the Chargers this year.
He moved Jalen Ramsey inside, and that was the biggest difference to me anyway.
I do think that it's fair to be like, maybe we shouldn't crown them or like assume that, like, you know, I've seen people go as high as like picking them to win the AFC and, you know, being easily the best team in the AFC West. And I'm not ready to go there because I think they should have been a playoff team last year, even with all of the holes that they had on the defensive side of the ball. And they kind of fell apart at the end of the season. And that goes back to coaching. And yeah, you mentioned it, Justice, like, Brandon Staley's a defensive guy. Like, I understand that their personnel was not good on that side of the ball last year, but if that's what he's there for and that's what you expect him to improve, like, I don't think they should have had the worst run defense in football last year, and they had the worst run defense in football last year. So
Tillery went a long way for that. That's why I kind of give him a mulligan too. Like, some of these guys, you can tell just going into it, right? Like Chicago this year, anything that happens to Chicago this year, it is not an indictment of like Eberflus as a head coach, right? Like what happens offensively for the Giants, like I'm not going to hold that against Ben McAdoo just because like they have question marks everywhere, all across the board. So I'm cool with waiting on another year of Staley. The crowning him thing, I almost think that's more of a Justin Herbert thing than anything else, right? Like when we talk about the Chargers being able to take that step up and be able to be like an actual contender or win the AFC or anything like that, that all revolves just around like Justin Herbert is an amazing quarterback, does it not, KP?
I do not disagree at all. And it's probably always going to come back to Herbert, like just when we're talking about this.
Yeah.
Staley's attached to Herbert, so naturally people are going to take out some of their frustrations. And frustrations probably isn't the right word. It should be simple for us to watch Herbert and enjoy what he does without, you know, going over the top with the praise. And the same thing for Staley. Like we were just talking about the Rams. Like he did some very cool things with their front, put Ramsey in a position to succeed, and that helped the Rams go to another level on defense. That can be true without taking a one-liner from Staley and saying, this is the reason the Chargers are good. Like, no, that's not how it works, man. Like, that's not the reason. They're going to be a lot better this year because they have Khalil Mack not doing the things that they were asking other players to do who probably shouldn't be on the field last year. They're going to be better because now he has J.C. Jackson, so he has cornerbacks to run more coverages or run more man or funnel coverages a certain type of way to Derwin James, for example. Because he doesn't have to just live in two high or live in cover two because he doesn't trust his guys on the outside. So it goes a lot deeper than, you know, what we're talking about. But it's never easy for us on the internet to just be like, hey, this is this and that's what it is. Like it's nothing deeper. It's nothing more than that.
Spending 10 minutes talking about the Chargers is a very August activity. I just want to get that out of the way.
By the way,
not to spend much more time on this because I know we got other things to touch on. But do you guys remember who's interested in this job? Sean Payton.
Oh, there he is.
They had Sean Payton, right? It was Dallas, it's the Chargers, and it's the Miami Dolphins. Those were the names that got leaked. So I don't know how short the leash is. I things would have to get pretty bad, I think, in Los Angeles for them to pull the plug. I actually think like Miami might pull the plug after 1 year for McDaniel faster than year two for Staley in LA, depending on how bad it goes, just because of how high the floor is for the Chargers when Justin Herbert is under center and you got all the stars on defense. But something to keep in mind about, because the pressure does get turned on and you have a guy who's won a Super Bowl who's interested in the job. Like, I don't know, maybe you do make the switch. Who knows?
We do have plenty of overseason or preseason overreactions to get into on today's show. But before we do, I want to mention that the Cleveland Browns and quarterback Deshaun Watson could be expecting some kind of decision on his status, whether or not he's going to be available for today, if they're going to extend his suspension, possibly for the entire season. That decision could be coming up today or tomorrow, according to ESPN. But they did already say that they're going to start giving Jacoby Brissett a majority of the starting reps as their first string quarterback, assumedly bracing for a long Deshaun Watson suspension. They also lost starting center Nick Harris after suffering a knee injury in Cleveland's first preseason game. You know, I saw the reports that Watson looked pretty bad in his preseason action, and you know it's been over a year since he's played football and stepped on the football field, so I don't think that's too shocking, but it does feel like we're going to have a decision from the NFL, hopefully here today or tomorrow, and then we can stop talking about Deshaun Watson, whether or not he's going to play this season.
Yeah, I just don't understand, because they're still talking about like a settlement, right? And they already ruled, the independent arbiter that was jointly appointed by the NFLPA and the NFL said that he basically broke league rules in, I think it was four cases. It was either four or six. I can't remember the exact number. But that is basically what is being tried by the guy that, you know, the NFL was appointed in the appeals process. So I don't know if they're worried that like the appeals process is going to go into the start of the regular season. And that's why they need to, I guess, just like come to an agreement or something like that. But it feels like the NFL has the power to just say like, no, this guy's banned for a year. Like, it wasn't that what Tom Brady took the NFL to court for, and the court basically said, you know, the NFL can do whatever they want. I don't really understand what's happening in this situation, but a decision coming sooner rather than later, I think, is better. And the fact that Jacoby Brissett is taking a bunch of snaps is actually a change. Like, you read all the beat people down in Cleveland, and it was Watson was basically getting all the snaps the entire offseason.
Why? Like, they knew this was going to happen, right? So why did you spend, let's say, 2 months or whatever, however long?
They were legitimately surprised by the extra allegations. They thought there were 20. There were 24 that came, right? So that was their line of thinking.
Yeah, maybe that just goes to show you how out of the loop that they are with real life and what the NFL was really going to – how hard the NFL is going to come down on them.
Yeah, so should have a conclusion to that story here in the near future. But let's get into some preseason hype. And I want to start with the Pittsburgh Steelers because there was a couple of storylines from this preseason game that are absolutely out of control. But I don't know where you guys are at on wide receiver George Pickens, but I'm jumping aboard the hype train on George Pickens. I understand it's the preseason. I'm committing. I am all about George Pickens. I think he is going to be a superstar. I can't wait to see him in the regular season because he's been an absolute stud in training camp for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, it seems like he is being talked about more than any other Steelers player this training camp. And then had the incredible touchdown catch in the preseason game. He just looks like a star, and I'm buying into all of it. I don't care if I wind up getting hurt over it.
The only issue I had with him as a receiver, and this is a pretty big issue, is like he just didn't give you anything after the catch. Like, he was very limited after the catch. And like, we know that there has to be more for the reason that he fell. But if we're talking on the field as far as what receivers do, it's clear-cut number one. Like, he is who wins in isolation situations. And you're seeing that in these one-on-ones. Like, he's creating like 2-3 yards of separation on 5-yard curl routes. Like, that is very tough to do. And that just tells you how efficient he is with his footwork. And I mean, you see the 50-50 passes. He has no problem going up and making plays in contested situations. Like, he looks like the real deal. What happens when 3 weeks in, he hasn't scored a touchdown? Like, that's a very real possibility. His quarterback is still Mitch Trubisky. I hope he balls out. I'm confident that he will be a good player, but like, who knows, man? We see so much preseason hype every year that it's, and we talked about this just before coming on. These guys aren't going against the cream of the crop, so that it makes that the whole analysis part even that more challenging. But it's cool to see him get hype because it's so clear that he is the real deal.
I mean, we talked with N'Kobe Dean pre-draft, yeah, right? And we asked him, who's the best guy in practice at Georgia? He told us George Pickens. Like, talent has never been the issue with him. Pickens played, what, 3 games last year? So the fact that he's able to kind of like rebound, and even then he was playing limited snaps, the fact that he's able to rebound off of that injury that cost him most of his last year at Georgia, I think that's a really good sign. The Kenny Pickett stuff is where I say pump the brakes, where I'm like, he was playing against the third team defense. It's nice to see him do well. Let's see him do it at least against the second string in a very short amount of time.
But he does it when it matters, Justice. Kenny Pickett turns it on when the game was on the line. He
didn't it matter in the like ACC pass championship game or like anything like that?
It only matters when you want it to matter.
Yeah. No, I agree. You know, the Kenny Pickett narrative, which, you know, if you're following along with Steelers training camp, it's been pretty glaring that he is the number three quarterback and it's not close. Like, Mitch Trubisky is their starter, and Mike Tomlin confirmed that with Mason Rudolph being the backup, and then Kenny Pickett is in a distant third. But then he has the 13-15 2-touchdown game-winning touchdown pass, and then the narrative is, oh, Kenny Pickett, proving all the doubters wrong, silencing everybody who's questioning his talent. And it's like, it is preseason. We got to slow down. I know we're starved for football, but we got to slow down because there's not that much you can really take from that Kenny Pickett performance.
I've seen Deshaun Kaiser throw a game winner for the Packers in the preseason, and he was not the answer when Aaron Rodgers went down. So,
how many games does Kenny Pickett start a game this season?
I don't think so.
I really don't think so. We had this conversation after the draft, and we were like, probably midseason or whenever after their bye is. But I think if Trubisky is a starter, Trubisky is a starter. Maybe he goes down with an injury. I guess the bigger question is, like, is Trubisky going to get reps over Rudolph? I don't know. That gets into a tricky spot. Like, KP, you know how practices are run. Like, okay, think about it from this way. Like, you go into the regular season, do you want Trubisky or do you want Pickett as your quarterback three at that point? Because Rudolph has been in the system. Right. Rudolph, like, if he has to come off the bench to play snaps halfway through a game after a week of practice where he's not been prepped to be the starter and has hardly been giving any reps, right? Like, it's probably the way that you go. If Pickett can't become quarterback two within the next couple of weeks, we're probably just not going to see him at all this season.
That's a good point about practice. So the 49ers, up until this week, Trey Lance, if they had 10 practice reps, Trey Lance would get 7, or Trey Lance would get 6, Sudfeld would get 2, and then Brock Purdy would get the rest. Starting this week, 10 plays, Trey Lance is getting 9 of those, and Sudfeld's getting maybe 1. But there's a good chance Trey Lance gets all of those. So as we get closer and closer to the season, you're going to start preparing. When you're preparing to be on the field, you're going to let your starters have it. So, yeah, I don't think so, man. It's going to be tough for Pig to play, and it could just be a redshirt year for him, honestly.
Yeah. If it doesn't happen within the next couple of weeks, I mean, there's only 2 more weeks of the preseason left. So, and some of those games kick off in a couple of days. So, it's like really like the next 9 days. If he can't become quarterback 2 in the next 9 days, then he's probably just going to take a redshirt year.
Yeah, I think it takes a situation where it's like the Steelers know for sure that this is going to be Mike Tomlin's first losing season. And it's just a bad year. And maybe late in the season, they're just like, all right, let's just get him in a live game and see what he can do. I think that's the only way you wind up seeing Kenny Pickett this year. The New York Jets avoid disaster with quarterback Zach Wilson's leg injury or knee injury, I should say. He injures his meniscus in their preseason matchup. He's expected to miss 2 to 4 weeks. He did have surgery earlier this week, but it was initially feared that it could be more serious than that, but they got good news after they got in there and cleaned the knee up. So it looks like Joe Flacco is going to be the week one starter against the Baltimore Ravens. And if you buy into the Jets beat writers, then Joe Flacco has been the better quarterback than Zach Wilson through training camp anyway. So maybe this is a blessing for the New York Jets.
He was last year, right? I mean, we've talked about it. Like, Wilson was probably the 4th best quarterback the Jets played last year. And that's not a reason to give up on him. I mean, it's nice that he's not going to miss this entire year, because imagine going into year 3 of Zach Wilson, how much would we have learned at all if, you know, he's coming back in July of 2023? Like, what data points do we have? Is he the answer? Is he not the answer? I feel like we have no direction. So I feel like it's good that he's going to get a look in the season. All the Twitter doctors were wrong. You guys see that? All the Twitter doctors were like, definitely an ACL tear. Like, I don't know. As someone who's torn his ACL twice, I was like, I don't know. He kind of – it didn't look that bad to me. But meniscus is a tricky one, because all you can do is scrape it out. So I don't know what that means long term, right? Because those things don't really grow back. There's not really a way to, like, fix a meniscus once you end up scraping down to, like, bone-on-bone stuff. But it's nice that he's not missing time at the very least.
How many games is Zach Wilson going to miss? Like, obviously, he's going to miss the start of the season. Do you guys think that, like, will he last double digits? Or is this just going to be, like, how his career goes? Because remember, he's not a big guy.
The thing is, for Zach Wilson, I'm not really worried about the injury thing for him this year. The way that he'd end up losing the job, I feel like, this year is if someone takes over the locker room and is just, like, outperforming him, right? Like, if he's kind of lucky it's Flacco that's coming in and kind of outperforming him a little bit. Because I don't think anyone is like, Joe Flacco, that's my dude. Like, it's not a Ryan Fitzpatrick situation where the locker room just, like, rallies around him, right? But if Flacco was that guy and did outperform him, and then Wilson comes back and starts stinking it up, I think that's where you get to a problem in the locker room, and you're like, I mean, you know Salah. Salah, like, he's going to be in there. He knows, like, locker room chemistry, all that stuff. Like, he would make that decision if he started feeling like the locker room was slipping. I just don't think Flacco is that guy. So I don't really think Zach Wilson's at risk.
And I think it was on last week's show, we joked around about the Jets taking a look at Jimmy Garoppolo. And
there
was
a hot second where that looked like a really good take. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it already got refuted that they're not actually interested in Jimmy Garoppolo. But looking at the Jets' early season schedule, it's kind of a brutal run. Like, they start with Baltimore, who I think we all have high expectations for. Then the Browns, and it's probably going to be Jacoby Brissett at quarterback, but they still have a very talented team, so that's not an easy win. Then the Bengals, then the Steelers, and we'll see how they look early in the season. But then it's the Dolphins, the Packers, the Broncos. Like, those are all teams that are going to be a lot better this season. So it's kind of a brutal run, but I would imagine as soon as he's good to go, he's going to be the starter, unless Joe Flacco just looks insane or something. And they're like, we can't leave Joe Flacco on the bench. But it'd be hard for me to imagine a scenario where Joe Flacco really looks that good for the New York Jets.
I don't think so. I think Flacco, this is his job now. It's like the backup bridge guy.
Yeah, 100%. Another wide receiver that has been really impressive in training camp, maybe not quite as impressive as George Pickens, but Green Bay Packers wide receiver Romeo Doubs. Aaron Rodgers obviously had high praise for him, which is weird because Aaron Rodgers doesn't usually praise very many people, at least not rookie players. But then he looked impressive in the Packers preseason game. He did catch a touchdown. Justice, I know you're all aboard the Romeo hype train. How'd you feel about his performance in their first preseason game?
Pretty good. He had a couple of drops that like weren't happening in the at training camp, which I thought was interesting. He had a big drop in joint practices this week against the New Orleans Saints, but it seems like he's still doing pretty good. Everyone keeps asking me if the Romeo Doubs stuff is like legitimate, and I'm like, I think he's going to be a pretty good player, but he's like wide receiver 4 on the team right now. Like, Christian Watson is just going to get snaps over him. Sammy Watkins is going to start, and Alan Lazard is going to start. So, like, I think he's probably going to get some burn as a return man sometimes. I think you're going to see him on the field, but I think he's going to be like a 400-500-yard receiver. I don't think he's going to be a guy who's cracking, you know, quadruple digits at some point this season.
Better than Amari Rodgers?
Better than Amari Rodgers. Factual. Amari Rodgers is a punt returner who's also Randall Cobb's backup, and Randall Cobb basically just plays slot on third down. Rodgers called Randall Cobb this week. He called him like one of the best slot receivers in the NFL. I'm like, Randall Cobb is good for 300 yards a year, man. I don't understand what we're doing with this Randall Cobb thing, but he only plays one down wide receiver.
So he's not as good as George Pickens then.
Unfortunately not. I mean, if Pickens were healthy and he didn't have any off-field stuff, I think you probably easily would have been a top 20 pick in the draft. So kind of comparing apples to oranges here.
No, I do think Packers fans should still be excited about Romeo. I think he's got a good chance of being a good player. I want to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles and quarterback Jalen Hurts and wide receiver A.J. Brown. Everything coming out of Eagles camp is that they are just lighting it up in the passing game. And Jalen Hurts knows who his number one wide receiver is, and he's targeting him often. And A.J. Brown continues to make plays and look like he is that true number one wide receiver that we all know he can be. And, you know, A.J. Brown didn't get any action during Philadelphia's training camp or preseason game, but Jalen Hurts did. And he looked pretty good on the few snaps that he got. So I'm curious how you guys feel. We've talked about the Eagles quite a bit and Jalen Hurts trying to improve as a passer, but what are our expectations for this Eagles team, and how are we feeling about this offense overall as we get closer to the season?
A.J. Brown is just going to lift up Devontae Smith so much, and obviously Jalen Hurts. They have to stay healthy, of course, but are we talking about a team that can be sneaky good? I think it just depends on what Jalen Hurts gives you as a passer. But also how creative the offensive coordinator can be, because you can rely on him in the running game and do a lot of things in the running game with him. I am a closet Miles Sanders fan. I think he should be a lot better than what he is. His health matters a bunch too, but whenever I watch him, it seems like he does a lot of good things. What they do on defense is going to be the reason that they're competitive. Their defensive line is nasty. Obviously, they drafted Jordan Davis, and there's some clips going around of him preseason. But he's going to be able to dominate anybody. Why? Because he's always done that all of his life, and that's not just going to change magically. He's going to be good. I think that their secondary is much improved as well.
Safety was what really killed him last year.
Huge, huge. And being able to get Jaquaski Tartt, like, he's not a big name, but he's one of the more solid safeties in the NFL. You can do a lot with him. You get Darius Slay for another year, James Bradbury, the Giants cast off for whatever reason. So they should be good. On paper, they're good. We'll see if, you know, the chemistry is there and whatnot. But I don't have many issues with the Eagles, and I think they have a lot fewer questions than they did going into last year.
So my thoughts whenever A.J. Brown comes up, it's not even really with the Eagles. I agree with all the points KP was saying. Like, I think this team is in the wild card hunt in the AFC in a pretty, you know, weak AFC, I think. But when A.J. Brown comes up, I'm like, you think the Titans regret it? I kind of think the Titans regret it, right? Like, look at their wide receiver roster right now. It's like Robert Woods, a bunch of no-name guys, and then Treylon Burks, who's still getting playing time into the fourth quarter of the preseason opener. He's had asthma issues throughout the summer. And then you're hearing stuff about playbook stuff, which is what the big question mark was coming out was for him coming out of Arkansas, where they just basically, you know, designed a bunch of plays. It's like, this is very similar to the Kadarius Toney stuff, where you're like, oh, the gadget player is used like a gadget player because he doesn't really know how, like, the nuances of the wide receiver position. So they're not asking him to do that. And that doesn't really prep him for the NFL level, right? So the A.J. Brown one, of all the wide receiver moves, right, you look at how much was given up for, like, Hollywood Brown, right? Like, I wouldn't have done that. The A.J. Brown trade, I was like, dang, I kind of wish Green Bay would have gotten in there and been involved a little bit. I do kind of wonder, like, if the Titans regret that, because if Robert Woods goes down, like, what is their passing offense? Like, they might not have an outlet.
Look at all the other contracts from, like, that class of receivers. They could have matched that. A.J. Brown tweeted it himself, so.
That's what A.J. Brown was like, dude, I wanted to be here. What they gave me was, like, weren't they given – they offered him, like – 18 mil or something.
Yeah,
or,
and everybody else is getting like something crazy.
Yeah, like, it was just not going to happen. Like, be realistic. Like, maybe they're just not going to pay wide receivers, and maybe that's kind of like their goal, because, I mean, they are the most, like, smash mouth. I think we kind of group running teams together in the NFL a lot more than we actually should. Like, the Tennessee Titans are like the Stanford football of the NFL. Like, they are power football. I formation, run it down the middle, West Coast play action. Like, that is what they are. And I guess I get devaluing wide receiver if you're going to do that, but better hope Derrick Henry's healthy, because if not, like, your offense sure spirals real quick.
It is very worrisome that they had Treylon Burks playing with the, like, third, fourth string guys late into the fourth quarter of preseason game number one.
He was out there with Kenny Pickett. He was playing Kenny Pickett ball against XFL starters.
Steve, what does that tell you when you see a first rounder, a high draft pick, playing into the fourth quarter? What do you think that tells you the staff thinks about him?
I mean, I think it specifically, and I want to talk about Malik Willis here too, because he did have some really flashy plays in that game. It's one, I think that it says something about who the coaching staff is, because I think that Mike Vrabel is the kind of guy that's like, I don't care where you were drafted. If you're not playing well, like, you know, we're just going to play you with the backups. And I think there's some coaching staffs that say, this guy's a first round pick, we can't put him out there with third stringers and fourth stringers. But I think that Tennessee is kind of that type of organization. And, you know, Burks has missed some time in practice, so maybe he's still not there yet, and he's been dinged up a little bit. So maybe that has something to do with it. But to me, it just says that Mike Vrabel's like, he's nowhere near where we want him to be. And if he's going to be a starter in our offense, then he's got to figure some things out. He's got to put a lot of work in still. So it's not what you want to see when you trade A.J. Brown and then you go draft that guy with the draft pick that you got for A.J. Brown. It's not great, but I want to get your guys' thoughts on Malik Willis, because he did have a nice touchdown run, a big deep down the field throw, like had his moments. But then even like what I was getting to with Mike Vrabel, he said after the game, oh no, I pulled Malik Willis. He would have gotten more time, but he kept running and not throwing the football. And I wanted to see him throw the football. So I took him out of the game because he was bothering me that he kept running the football without going through his reads.
I mean, it's that offense, right? We just talked about it. Like it's that Stanford offense, and you have a guy who's freelancing when everything is supposed to be like dictated 1-2-3 out. Like that's why Tannehill's been able to do well in that play action shot stuff. I get it. Like watching Malik, you obviously understand the highlights, but at the same time too, it's, I don't think he's ready just yet. And I don't think that's an indictment on a rookie quarterback. Like I don't think any of the, we just talked about Kenny Pickett, first round pick, who's QB3. So I don't think any of these quarterbacks are ready to play just quite.
How is, and we, and when you talk about these guys, in my mind, I'm wondering like how close is he to playing? Obviously he's probably not gonna play this year because of Tannehill, but I wonder what they're expecting out of Willis, because the way that you talked about their offense, you know, the smash mouth, under center, play action, that seems perfect for Willis because you can design a lot off of the running game with him. Like you can get him involved.
Yeah, you get him involved in package plays like they did with like Trey Lance, right? Like they did that last year, Trey Lance in, what was it, like week three or whatever against the Packers. He was running stuff at the goal line where you could do some of the Cam Newton stuff where your team's already good at pulling guards and stuff. You can run power, you can run counter, and you could do it with a quarterback. So it's 11 on 11 football instead of just having it be a handoff. So I would expect the team definitely uses some sort of packages for Malik. I just don't think that he's going to be really in contention to start anytime soon.
When you bring that up too, people think, when you think about a running quarterback, like Lamar is an outlier. Lamar is faster than everybody on the football field. That's not the only way for a quarterback running game or running play to be successful. I think Willis is probably a lot more sustainable for like your every down quarterback, just because he has the size and he has good vision and he falls forward when you tackle him. So I would be surprised if we don't see Willis worked in over the course of the first half of the season in that sense anyway.
I would like to see them get creative and utilize him in different looks like you guys were talking about. Going back to the Titans pass catchers, it's like if any of those wide receivers get hurt, it's like, who's their top pass catcher? Austin Hooper at tight end, like might be their best offensive weapon outside of Derrick Henry. It gets ugly fast for Tennessee.
Yeah, really bad. I mean, this is a team that be like, Odell, what do you think of Nashville? What do you think of Nashville? Like, I don't know. But I mean, there has to be options out there. Like, this has to be a team that has to be a contender for trade deadline, wide receivers, guys who are cap casualties, you know, in week 2, 3, 4, 5 of the season when it looks like, you know, vets are on a team that's not going to make the playoffs. Like, this team has to make a move at wide receiver, right? Like, they can't just go into it with, like, Robert Woods and Nick Westbrook. That can't be the answer.
Yeah. I would have to imagine they're going to look at bringing in a veteran of some kind at some point in Tennessee. But let's take a quick timeout right here. When we get back, we'll get into some more of our preseason reactions from week one of the NFL preseason. That's coming up next on NFL University.
Support for this show comes from Saks. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe, like making vacation your whole personality with a camp shirt from Casablanca that screams Italian holiday. You can shop Saks.com for everything on your agenda, whether it's suede Prada loafers for a dinner party or a bright theory blazer for the office. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome back into NFL University. I am Steven Serta of Arrowhead Pride, joined as always by Justice Mosqueda of Acme Packing Co., as well as Kyle Posey of Niners Nation. The New England Patriots, whose offense we talked about last week is kind of falling apart or looking really terrible, and it looks like they have no idea what they're doing with Joe Judge and Matt Patricia, did play a preseason game this past week, and running back James White, who He's one of the more underrated players in that Patriots offense for a long time. Did announce his retirement from the NFL. So it sounds like second-year running back Ramondre Stevenson is going to step into that James White role now that James White has retired. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts or feelings on Ramondre Stevenson. Personally, I like him more than Damian Harris, and I would like to see him have a bigger role in the offense this season.
Let's dial back here and talk about Joe Judge and Matt Patricia. So what were they thinking coming into this offseason, right? Like, what were the expectations? We have our first-round quarterback going into his second season. There is nothing that they could do about, you know, Josh McDaniel taking another coach. Like, that's something you want to happen. But if that's the case, why not? And you don't have to pluck everybody from the McVay-Shanahan tree, but why not bring in somebody, you know, who's this innovative guy who runs a lot of the same things that we do, and instead they go with Patricia and Judge, who are coming off some of the worst coaching jobs in the NFL. Like, that's probably the most surprising thing. And I understand they're Belichick guys, but if we're talking about putting not only Jones, Tyquan Thornton, some of your young prospects on offense in the best position to succeed, how is familiarity the key?
It is interesting, right? Because it's like none of the players seem to like Judge or Patricia to the point that, like, they reacted on social media with happiness, right, when those guys were fired. At what point does, like, the Patriot Way stuff start losing its shine when you see Bill Belichick in his third year not having a lot of success with the Pats and Tom Brady's won a Super Bowl and, you know, pushed deep into the playoffs two other times, right? At what point does that kind of, like, switch for players where they were like, I don't know, maybe it was Brady. Maybe I don't need to deal with guys like Joe Judge and Matt Patricia under Bill Belichick and stuff like that. With that being said, I do like Ramondre Stevenson. I do kind of wonder how the change in the offense, like, impacts him, because I liked him more as, like, a downhill runner, right? Like, behind the fullback when they were doing a bunch of that stuff. And now it seems like they're going to start running, like you were mentioning, KP, they're running a lot more of, like, the Rams type of stuff, Niners type of stuff. Do I want Ramondre Stevenson running stretch all those times? Do I want him catching pitches and stuff like that? Probably not. I want him to be a downhill runner.
Downhill. Get your foot in the ground. We're going to
run. And he's good at that.
Very.
He's good at it.
Yeah. He is a thick, powerful running back. And I just want to see him utilized more in this offense because I think he's a talented player. But as far as their offense goes, like you guys were saying, it's, I think we even talked about it last week. Like, I think that there's a strong case to be made. They are the two worst head coaches in the NFL over the last several years. And
Urban Meyer denial.
Wow. And, you know, he doesn't count. He's not a real person.
And, you know, and maybe we're seeing a shift a little bit with Belichick. Again, like you were saying, that, like, you know, Tom Brady's not there anymore. It's not, we just win no matter what anymore. And there's some growing pains here where you're like, what are you doing with Mac Jones? Like, I personally don't believe that Mac Jones is a superstar quarterback, but he showed enough promise as a rookie that, okay, you build around that and see what you can develop it into a little bit more. And it seems like this is the opposite of how you do that, of just giving the offense over to Matt Patricia and Joe Judge because they're former assistants and you want to make sure that they stay employed in the NFL.
The Patriot way takes a lot of buy-in, right? That's why those guys from the Patriots haven't had success elsewhere, because they say, no, you're an arm or a leg off of Bill Belichick. You're not actually Bill Belichick. I just wonder when that actually comes for Bill Belichick. Like, how many more years until players start to kind of, like, roll their eyes and say, like, no, you did that because of Brady, right? Because people are going to start thinking about that. Like, if you give them enough time and you don't have success, that's just naturally where the conversation is going to go at some point.
The Kansas City Chiefs did lose their first preseason matchup against the Chicago Bears this past weekend. And
on the terrible field. How bad was the field?
I saw
the pictures before the game, and it's just all torn up.
It was bad to the point where, you know, Patrick Mahomes was asked about it, and he was like, oh, it's fine. You know, it's football. You just play through whatever. Like, gave typical quarterback answer. And Andy Reid was just like, it was bad. it was trash. Like, and Andy Reid's never that upfront and honest about anything. And Andy Reid was like, yeah, it wasn't good. We weren't happy about it at all. So I don't know what the standards are for field requirements in the NFL, but if Soldier Field can continue to be that terrible, it seems like the standard should be a little bit higher for these athletes before
they do you know why it sucks so bad?
No.
So I think it's under like the it's the jurisdiction of like the Parks District in Chicago. So the Bears are just like, yeah, we don't pay for it because the stadium is owned by the city anyway, right? And then the city is having beef with them because they want to move the team up north to like Arlington Heights or whatever, like an hour away. So now the city is basically just like not taking care of the field as a response to that. Just like, dude, hire someone. Bears, hire someone to take care of the damn field. Like, this is going to be a problem the entire year. It's only August.
They can afford lawn maintenance.
Yes.
As an organization.
They've had the team for 100 years. Like, you guys got the money? I know you got the money to have someone to cut grass. Get real.
Yeah, that's absolutely insane. But I do want to talk about the Chiefs and their performance a little bit against the Bears. And yeah, the Bears starting offense didn't look very good. Didn't see much from Justin Fields, kind of what we expected from a team that's likely going to be one of the worst in the NFL this upcoming season. But I did see a little bit from rookie running back Isaiah Pacheco, who has been the most hyped player in Chiefs training camp easily this year. And he's exciting. I'm not willing to go there just yet the way I am with George Pickens on Isaiah Pacheco. But he's intriguing. He is exciting. He is a little bit of a thicker running back. He's like 216 pounds. He's got the 4.37 40-yard dash, and he was a seventh-round pick. But you know, he played at Rutgers, and they were not a good football team while he was there. I'm willing to blame some of it on that. Why he was a seventh-round pick?
Okay, today Eric Bieniemy, Chiefs offensive coordinator, says their former first-round running back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, needs to get in better shape. Not great on the heels of preseason all-everything Isaiah, seventh-round running back Rutgers, who, if you see any clips on Twitter, you think this guy is the best thing smoking, man. You think he's going to be the reason that the Chiefs win another ring. I think speed matters for the Chiefs because – Jared McKinnon last year, like, they were at their best, and it's, I don't know if this is a low bar or whatever, but like he was able to do things CEH couldn't, and that was essentially just because he could run. Like, he could do things out of the backfield. So I imagine they're probably getting those same vibes this year with the rookie. Do you think it's sustainable though, or is this just another preseason darling? I guess that's probably what the Chiefs need to figure out. But again, at the same time, they need production out of the backfield, and he seems like their guy, right?
I think he's got a shot. I mean, I don't know how you feel, Steven, but like running backs, it seems like if there's one position group where you can get worked in early, it's always running back. I mean, to your point, both of your points about like speed out of the backfield, like when we talked about Clyde Edwards-Helaire as a potential first round pick, it wasn't like inside zone runner. It was all the stuff he was doing when he split out offset in the shotgun and he's running wheel routes or corner routes and stuff like that. And he just, for whatever reason, I mean, maybe it is a weight or conditioning issue, hasn't been able to translate that to the NFL level. We did see that for spurts out of Jerick McKinnon this past season. And I thought that was probably the best the Kansas City Chiefs look like from an entire game standpoint. Not, you know, we always talk about like the first two drives or whatever and how it's scripted and they look good and then they fall off. But from like a full game perspective, I thought they were always better when McKinnon was getting some reps. And if, you know, he's able to get them those type of looks, I mean, why not? We saw them have success in that type of offense. We've seen them go after a running back with that type of skill set that for whatever reason hasn't translated. So if they give the keys to a sixth round running back, I don't think they care that he's a sixth round running back if he can do those things. Tyreek was like a sixth round pick, wasn't he? Sixth or fifth something
round.
Like that?
Fifth round. Yeah. I think you guys are pretty right on with it. And this coaching staff has been asked several times over the years, like, why don't you guys use Clyde in the passing game? Like, you know, that was such a big part of his college tape and why you guys said you drafted him at the end of the first round. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he has just not shown the type of explosion that you need and the type of pop and speed that you need in the NFL, especially in this offense where, yeah, they need the plays to develop fast. And then if they don't develop fast, then you get Mahomes outside the pocket and he can create himself. But Clyde just hasn't shown that kind of game speed that you need there. And yeah, I think their offense looked the best version of itself when Jerick McKinnon was their running back last season, because they were utilizing elements of their offense that they had just totally kicked to the curb for the last couple of years. And we hadn't seen it since they had had a healthy Damian Williams, like during the 2019 playoff run. And it had been that long since they had utilized those design screens that Andy Reid loves so much. And, you know, Pacheco, I think the biggest thing that I've been impressed with him so far in training camp is the way they're utilizing him as a pass catcher. Like, they're giving him a lot of routes. They're giving him a lot of opportunity to catch passes. And so the Chiefs know they need that element in their offense, especially after moving on from Tyreek Hill. And I think that's what's going to make him a vital part of the offense this season. Like, coming out of training camp, I was telling myself, he's going to be the RB3. It'll be Clyde. It'll be Jerick McKinnon. It'll be Pacheco. And then Pacheco's getting reps as the number two running back in their preseason game. And Jerick McKinnon didn't play. Jerick McKinnon also missed practice today with a hamstring injury that popped up. So, you know, he might not be healthy right now. But I think that Pacheco is their number two running back. And if Clyde isn't playing well, he might have a strong chance of being their number one running back, like, by the end of the regular season.
And McKinnon's always dealt with injuries. Like, if they go into it thinking McKinnon and Pacheco, those are our backs that set us up, you know, for the best offense moving forward for the season. McKinnon's out of the picture with an injury. I can see Pacheco being that guy. I don't know. Like, why wouldn't they, right? At some point, I mean, this is a team that is contending, right? It's not a team that is really, like, trying to, like, spend a bunch of developmental snaps across the board. If you got to pull the trigger, you got to pull the trigger at some point. Like, the AFC West is going to be super competitive this year. Why are we waiting another year to get this running back involved in the passing game?
Though you talk about, like, CEH and getting involved and why Pacheco is probably a better option, just because you talk about, you know, the lack of explosion. Those underneath routes mean nothing if you can't make somebody miss. Like, you're throwing a 3-yard flat. Now it's 2nd and 7. What are you doing for us? You're not bringing anything to the table. Now Mahomes has to run around, you know, create magic on his own, as opposed to, again, just like 3 or 4 reps with McKinnon, where if he just turns one of those into like a 20, 30-yard gain, that's the difference of being ahead of the chain. So it does make a lot of sense, you know, why they're kind of shifting away from CH. It also does suck that they invested what they invested in him as well, though.
The Seattle Seahawks were set to give quarterback Drew Lock the starting role, at least for preseason game number 2 coming up on Thursday. But then Drew Lock tested positive for COVID. So now he is going to be out. Geno Smith is their starter, if you ask Pete Carroll, who prior to Drew Lock testing positive for COVID, Pete was like, Geno's the starter, but we're going to give Drew the nod preseason game number 2. We just want to see him get more reps. He tests positive for COVID, so Geno Smith is probably going to play on Thursday now because Drew Lock's not going to be available. But they both had decent preseason number 1 outings, so Geno Smith is the starter. I don't think we need to spend that much time on Drew Lock and Geno Smith.
No, I don't care about the Seahawks until week 1 when it's Russ coming back and seeing what the reaction of the crowd is.
I do want to talk about Texans rookie running back Damian Pierce. He's easily looks like the Texans' best running back, and they've got Marlon Mack. They've got what I assume is a 50-year-old Rex Burkhead still on the roster for some reason. But Damian,
I didn't realize he was still with us. That's surprising.
He is still actively on the Texans roster, still actively ahead of Damian Pierce on the Texans depth chart right now. I've got a friend who works in Houston Texans radio, and I've talked to him a lot about their rookie running back, and he's like, he looks like he's one of the most talented offensive players that they have. And the coaches refuse to acknowledge that he's the best running back on the team. So he might not be their starter week 1, but it seems like he's inevitably going to be the starter sooner or later. When you're the Texans, I don't know why you wouldn't just get it out of the way. You don't owe Marlon Mack and Rex Burkhead any.
No, not at all. Speaking of players you didn't know were still around, do you guys remember Geronimo Allison?
Yeah.
Geronimo Allison.
Packers legend, Geronimo Allison.
You take a guess, a wild guess where he's at right now.
He's on a team.
He's on a team.
Raiders.
Atlanta.
You got it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think of teams with bad wide receiver groups.
Well, you nailed it. The Atlanta preseason game was nuts. You get Geronimo Allison. He had like a wide open touchdown if he just like caught the ball and turned around. But then he looked very unathletic trying to turn around and was stopped short of the goal line. Felipe Franks, who is now a tight end, they threw a slot fade to him and he missed the high point on it. Weird team to watch in the preseason. I still don't really know what Atlanta's doing, but Marcus Mariota looks solid.
Yeah, I had no idea Geronimo Allison was still floating around the NFL.
I had a Falcons
season.
I had a Falcons fan DM. I know he got hurt, but I had a Falcons fan DM me say, "Wow, you were right about Drake London. Like, he is good." yeah. Who knew? Top 10 receiver.
Final thing I want to mention before we get out of here. Washington running back Antonio Gibson had a rough preseason outing. Only carried the ball a handful of times, also lost a fumble during the game. Rookie Brian Robinson looked pretty good. I think he had 6 touches and a touchdown in the contest. And then Antonio Gibson was running with the special teams unit during practice this week. I don't know if this is Ron Rivera punishing him or if it's like any indication that like, no, we've just totally lost faith in Antonio Gibson and Brian Robinson is playing himself into a possible starting role for Washington.
Tough scene. I mean, that was one of the teams that actually used 2 backs on the field at the same time last year.
Quite a bit.
And if you can't use Gibson, because I don't think Brian Robinson really fits that type of an offense, right? Like a 2 back offense. And again, it's not like they were doing it every play, but if that really happens, I think it's really like a 1 back offense. And then maybe it's running back by committee, switching them out on, you know, every 2 plays or something like that. But it doesn't end up being you getting 2 running backs on the field, which is one of the ways Washington was actually able to move the ball. I know everyone talks about Arizona and stuff as teams that are like super spread teams, but Washington was way up there in terms of like how many actual like tight end bodies were on the field. Like they hardly played any of them. You had guys who were like college wide receivers lining up in like a 2-point stance in tight end formations and them saying, yeah, that's when we're going big. Like it's a spread team.
And I believe they do still have JD McKissick. So he could be, he's going to be in that pass catching down role, but did you guys see the clip that was circulating of that interview with Carson Wentz? I don't remember what outlet it was from, but the guy
was a TV channel.
Yeah, he was just holding nothing back. Just, you know, so Carson, what do you think about all the reports about you just being awful? Like being terrible and just being a horrible.
Like, so the Eagles didn't want you. The Colts didn't want you.
Yeah.
Here's a long list of everyone else who didn't want you.
Washington's team president came out and was like, don't expect any like one-offs anymore after you did this. So
I don't know, out of line for what he said? How he presented the question?
Probably not. I mean, it certainly wasn't nice, but like you ask a guy, like, damn, you went through something, obviously. Like, how did that go? You probably could have worded it different, but I don't think it was extremely out of line.
Yeah.
He was given up on by 2 teams. Like, we don't have to pretend he wasn't.
I don't think
he's been productive or good either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most, I think, media members would try to find a softer way to ask that than the way it was presented. And it is kind of a drag if you work for, you know, Washington sports media, and that guy just ruined it for everybody. like exclusive interviews. Oh no, we're not playing this game anymore. And it's already a dumpster fire of an organization. But yeah, I mean, I think that sometimes we are a little too sensitive around that stuff. And it's not like Carson Wentz has done anything that we should like feel really bad about it. Like he's now burned bridges at 2 different organizations where it seems like his teammates just really did not like him. Seems like coaches don't like him and management didn't like him. Like he kind of brought some of that on himself. There's just probably softer ways to go about it.
Yeah, he doesn't play well with others.
But thank you guys for listening to this week's edition of NFL University. You can follow KP on Twitter at KP_show. You can follow Justice on Twitter at JUMOSQ. I'm Steven Serta. That's where you can find me. Please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review everything that we are doing on Apple and Spotify. We will talk to you guys next week.
Support for this show comes from Saks. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe, like making vacation your whole personality with a camp shirt from Casablanca that screams Italian holiday. You can shop Saks.com for everything on your agenda, whether it's suede Prada loafers for a dinner party or a bright theory blazer for the office. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.